So the Lord was sorry that he ever made them and put them on the earth. It broke his heart. And the Lord said, I will wipe this human race I have created from the face of the earth. He says, I'm going to destroy all people. So who does that include? That every single person on the face of the earth at that point is doomed. Including who? Begins with N, ends with Oa. He is doomed along with everybody else. Hi, and welcome again. We're looking today at another part of the Noah story. Now, we did that a couple of weeks ago, and then we had a break because it was Thanksgiving. But if you want to recap, you can look at what we did the previous time about Noah. So I want to read to you, if I can, again, a little bit of the beginning of the story of Noah in chapter 6 of Genesis. Remember, we're 6 chapters into an 1189-chapter story, and everything's gone wrong on a global scale for human beings, not for God. He saw all this coming. So we're going to read from Genesis chapter 6 and verse 5. This is what it says. The Lord observed the extent of human wickedness on the face of the earth. And he saw that everything they thought or imagined was consistently and totally even. Verse 6, so the Lord was sorry that he ever made them and put them on the earth. It broke his heart. Now listen to this. This is the bit I want us to look at today. The next couple of verses, these next two verses. And the Lord said, I will wipe this human race I have created from the face of the earth. Yes, I will destroy every living thing. All the people, the large animals, the small animals that scurry along the ground, and even the birds of the sky, I am sorry that I ever made them. Now, I have a question. Right at the beginning of this, it says I'm going to destroy all people. So, who does that include? Because it seems to suggest that every single person on the face of the earth at that point is doomed. And it seems to include that all means all, right? Everybody, every human being, including who? Begins with N, ends with Oa. Now, in chapter 9 and verse 20, it describes Noah not as a boat builder or an ark builder, but it describes him as a man of the soil, which I think is a great, great description of a human being. He's a man of the soil, and it includes him. He is doomed along with everybody else. Now I know that later on in verse 9, it says this. It says, this is the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, the only blameless person living on the earth at the time, and he walked in close friendship with God. But you see, if everybody is doomed, and if the rain is going to fall on the righteous and the unrighteous, and if the skies are going to open and all this flood is going to happen, then Noah's righteousness and blamelessness actually doesn't save him. It's not going to help him out at that point, right? Because he's part of the everything that God is going to wipe out off the face of the earth. Even though he's righteous and blameless and he walks closely with God, it's not going to help him unless God has a plan, right? And that's the important thing to think about here. Does God actually have a plan? You see, because being good has never been enough. It will never be enough, and it's not enough now. Me trying my best actually doesn't really help me too much because it's not enough. It's not good enough. And the Bible keeps saying that over and over again. Every single person has done something wrong. Everybody's fallen short of the standard that is set by God. And if we say we aren't included in that, then we fool ourselves and we lie to ourselves. That's what the Bible says. So this includes Everybody. The description of the wickedness here, that everybody's, every thought that they had and imagined was consistently and totally evil, that includes everybody. Me, you, and Noah. He's included in it all. See, in Genesis 6 and verse 8, which is the verse I skipped over deliberately, it tells us what's going to happen. Listen to this. I'm going to destroy everything. Yes, I will destroy every living thing, all the people, the large animals, the small animals that scurry along the ground, and even the birds of the sky. I am sorry I ever made them. Now, verse 8. But Noah found favor with the Lord. Found favor. That word favor is the word grace. It's the first time, actually, that it's mentioned in the Bible. Six chapters in, and we already need grace. We need to be let into God's plan, not because we're good, but because without being let into God's plan, we have no chance. Because outside of God's plan, all Noah is the most righteous, blameless, floating corpse. That's all he is. So it actually doesn't help him very much. Unless he grabs hold of God's plan and grabs hold of God's favor for his life. Now, this is why this story, this couple of thousand-year-old story, 3,000-4,000-year-old story, millions of years, if you believe that, or a shorter time, if you believe that, and I'm not here to debate how long ago this was. That's why this millennium-old story is so important for the 21st century. It's massively important, because unless we grab hold of and put ourselves into God's plan, we're lost and helpless. And God comes along, and through his grace and favor, he invites Noah to be part of his plan, to put himself inside God's plan. Now then, this plan comes with a whole set of instructions. That's what happens in the plan. In fact, the next chapter, it lays out all the way from beginning of verse 14, all the way to the middle section of chapter 7. It lays out how this plan is going to work, because God's plan always comes with instructions. Now, sometimes we're not very good with instructions. You open the box of something. I was with Randy, married to the Viking. So I was with Randy the other day. I was down at his house, and he had a tonneau cover for the back of his truck. Big boxes. So he opened the boxes, looked at them and go, oh, it's all shiny and pretty and new and great and wonderful. So we take it out, and we're going to start to put it all together. And it's all wonderful. We got all the power tools there with man stuff, right? So we're doing all that. So what don't we read? Oh, no. Let me put it another way. I'm not throwing anybody under the bus here, but what doesn't Randy read? The instructions, all right? So we put them aside, and as we're going along, we find that we halfway built the thing, put the tonneau cover on, and then we find that we have to unbuild what we've built because we missed a stage. Why? Because we didn't read the instructions. And God's plan comes with instructions. Somebody often once said, and as people have often said, that human beings don't come with instructions. Well, I think they do, actually. I think they do. And Randy's tonneau cover came with instructions. A little man sat in an office one day and drew out the plan and typed onto a computer and spent hours figuring out how these instructions would work and help Randy to put together his tonneau cover. And then Randy totally ignored them. And so for hundreds of couple of thousand years, God's instructions have been written down and put into different languages. And we've had the Bible in English for just over 700-800 years. And the instructions are in a language that we can read. And what do? In standard human form, we ignore the instructions. And these instructions are very, very important. They're important because They're about to spend approximately 1 year and 10 days in this floating box. Now, we often think it's just 40 days and 40 nights. It's not. They spend over a year in this floating box. If you read the times and the months and the days that they get in and out of the ark, they're in there a long time. And the instructions are crucial for them to be able to survive and be rescued during that time. And these instructions that God gives us are crucial if we are going to survive and live as human beings successfully on the planet. And I want you to notice something here, because the instructions to build this massive giant floating box, this is what turns up in the children's books, it doesn't describe that actually in the Bible. It just describes a giant floating shoebox, like I keep saying. Now, these pictures like that, right? They're very picturesque and all that type of stuff, but they're really not. See, that's how we build a boat, right? I mean, round portholes, a Home Depot shed plonked in the middle with a point at each end. And that's not what the description is in the Bible. Noah is described as a man of the soil, like I said earlier, not a boat builder. Somebody's once said that the Ark was built by amateurs, the Titanic was built by experts. You choose. And so he put this thing together in a giant box fashion. It wasn't hard instructions to follow. But he went on and he did these instructions. And what he built didn't stop the judgment coming. And that's what I want you to think about for a second. This plan that God had for Noah and his family didn't stop the instructions coming. That didn't stop the judgment from coming. The instructions that he was given, it wasn't like, if you do all this, there won't be any judgment. No, judgment is coming. This is going to happen. Because it's going to happen, I want you to follow these instructions. Because it's going to happen, judgment's imminent. It's going to happen. Because of that, I want you to follow these instructions. Now, what's strange is most cultures, over 300 of the major cultures on the face of the earth, have a worldwide flood in their tradition, right? And there's geological proof and all that type of stuff, proofs or evidences, not proofs, geological evidences that there was a cataclysmic worldwide event of a flood around the earth. And like all these different cultures have it. And what is also strange, and I mentioned this before, but in the Quran, in Surah 71, Noah turns up in the book of the Quran as a major prophet. And he has, in their story, four sons, not three. Now, they say that we tell the story of the three that survived, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. But they have a fourth son, and the fourth son is named Yam. And Yam does not follow the instructions and doesn't put himself inside God's plan. Instead, he decides that he's going to climb a mountain to escape the judgment of God, which is just relying on his own self-efforts. It's relying on his own work. It's relying on his own self-improvement. It's doing all the things that we do to avoid obeying God's instruction in our life. And Yam does that, and he perishes because of it. Everybody else is saved, who gets in the boat, the box, but Yam dies. Why? Because he won't give himself over to God's plan. That's why. Now, there's a couple of warnings in this for us and for me, and there's an invitation as well. You see, first of all, we've got to accept God's summation of the condition of the human race, that it's wicked, that it's evil, that left to its own devices, it will be selfish, it will be greedy, it will be murderous, it will be warmongering, it will lie and it will deceive and it will cheat and it will steal, and it will do all those things. Humanity left to itself will degrade to that. And you don't have to look far through history to see that that's true. Now, you can argue that all we want, but you look back through human history and we see it repeated over and over and over and over again. And you would think with all the technological advances that we have in our day and age, that human morality would have risen with it, and it hasn't. There's still atrocities being committed today in the 21st century, not in countries far across the world, right here in our own modern cultured societies. There's atrocities committed every single day because of God's summation of the human state is actually true. I do believe that. Now, we're asked, do you accept that? Because if we don't accept it, then basically we don't need to be rescued. But I look at around the world and I look at the planet and I look at the things that are happening on the earth, and I think human beings, humanity needs to be rescued. It's invited by God to be rescued. And we might think, I don't agree with God's summation of it. I don't believe that. It's an old book. I'm not going to believe that. I don't think it's relevant. I don't recognize this as a source of truth. You know, in Romania, when the country went through revolution and the then president Ceausescu, the dictator, was thrown out of power by the masses, the people revolted and threw him out of power, and they had a people's court and they sat down and they had Ceausescu there, the dictator, President Ceausescu, and he was there, and the court read out his crimes against the Romanian people. And as they read out the crimes against him and they had this court, he kept saying over and over and over again, "I do not recognize the authority of this court. I don't recognize it. It's an illegitimate court. I don't recognize the authority." But it didn't make any difference, because when they sentenced him to death and they shot him, he still died. It didn't matter whether he recognized the authority of the court or not. Physics took over the moment they pulled the trigger. And it's a sad thing that some people just say, "I don't recognize the authority of this book." It actually doesn't matter, because what this book says is actually going to happen, and it will be sad for the people who don't recognize it. And it was sad for the people in Noah's day who didn't heed the warnings of what was actually going to happen physically on the earth and to them at that time. Now, when I accept God's summation of the state of humanity and the state of me, what state I'm in, I then got to come to a realization that I can't do anything about this on my own. Just like Noah, his righteousness and his blamelessness and the fact that he walked with God wasn't going to save him when the rain fell. It wasn't going to, unless God had a plan. So all my best efforts are not going to save me. I still need God's help and his plan. I can't do this without him. And he has this plan. And then I realized then at that point of my need to be rescued. And then I'm faced with a choice. Do I put my life into his plan? Do I take my life and put it into his plan? Now you might think this is semantics, but it's actually not. It makes a big difference. I take my life and I put my life into God's plan. The entirety of my life goes into God's plan. Instead of inviting God to come and be part of my plan. Now, that's how we often hear the Bible presented and the gospel presented, to invite God into my life, to add him on as an added extra or one of the optional extras that you can weld on to a truck or a car when you're buying it. It's an optional extra, and I plug God in into the side of my life's plan. So I've got the God part option in my, and that's not what the gospel is. The gospel is me facing the choice that I have to take my whole life, my entirety of my life, and place it into God's plan. I change kingdoms. And I accept the fact that my citizenship then, it's not Canadian. I'm a dual citizenship person on earth. I have Canadian citizenship and I have British citizenship. But my real citizenship is heavenly. I'm a citizen of the heavenly kingdom. That's why Jesus said his kingdom was not of this earth. And we are invited to take our life, our entire existence, and put it into God's plan. Because we realize we cannot do this on our own. And human history proves it. Century after century, year after year, drought after drought, war after war, atrocity after atrocity, God invites me and he invites you today to put your life into his plan. And I wonder, do we have the guts to do that? Now, listen, I don't know where you are. I don't know what your day is looking like. I don't know where you're looking at this. But I want to take you to take a few moments at the end of watching this and quietly sit there and think about this. God is inviting me to be part of his plan. What is my response? What's my response to this? My response is yes, I'm in. I'm in. All in. I'm in. But what's your response? He wants you to be part of his plan. Please, please, please accept that invitation from him. Hey, bless you and stay safe. Thanks for listening.